When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome to Imp's WWE Adventures podcast on the Social Suplex Podcast Network. You can help the network out by leaving a 5-star review. You can also give a donation directly through Red Circle and become one of the amazing community by joining the Social Suplex Discord. Link is in the description. Listen to the other top-notch shows here on the Social Suplex Podcast Network, One Nation Radio, Keeping It Strong Style, All Things Elite, Wrestling Art Chris Things, Trish and Sarah, Tunnel Talk, and Sam Brown's AEW Match Guide Podcast. My name is Matt Mayer, aka Imp, and this is your quick look back at the WWE week that was. 30 minutes break from the G1 climax. Anyone else still thinking about Shota versus Gabriel Kidd? Oh, my God. Fascinating watch. Gripping stuff. Anyway, compared to WWE, you've got New Japan kicking off there. G1 climax, so they're in quite a big time with AEW. They're full throttling towards All In London. Those two companies are at peak interest periods as they go towards there. What's WWE? They're going towards SummerSlam, but it's not like they're eager about it. It's not like, oh my God, SummerSlam's coming up. It's like, by the way, guys, SummerSlam's coming up. There's a difference. There's a difference. Anyway, let's jump on over to WWE. For first off, from Omaha, Nebraska, for a little bit of Cody Rhodes. Cody Rhodes kicking off the show, saying hello to a boxer man at ringside before reminiscing about Randy Orton and the guilt he feels for being the reason for the man getting bloodlined through the announce table last week, waxing lyrical on Solo, only for A-Town Down Under to pop out into a 2-on-1 stompy stomp, boxer man, whoever he is, having his back and handing him a chair. And as we know, holding a chair suddenly gives you amped up superpowers, so in charges Cody to fight the former tag champions off and set up your main event tag team match of A-Town Down versus Cody Rhodes and mystery tag team partner. And that fell throughout the entire show. Just built up like, who's Cody Rhodes going to have his tag team partner? Is it one of the guys he's been teaming up with? Yes. Didn't ever think far. But they did the mystery tag team partner thing. But at least they answered it backstage right before the match. I didn't mind it. And as he's walking through backstage, he looks off camera and into shot walks Kevin Owens. And then they walk together through and out through the gorilla. And I thought, you know what? When they're doing the mystery guest, who's it gonna be? Who's the mystery guest? And it's the guy you all thought it was. At least they didn't have him come out and reveal who my tag team partner is and gesture towards the Titantron. No. They did a much more intuitive way to do that sort of reveal. Because when you walk out, you know someone's music's gonna hit out in the arena, you've made a bigger deal of it. But if you do it backstage, I feel like it's a much better way. All the people around Cody Rhodes, be it Randy, be it KO, they're all super over anyway. Like the fans are gonna be happy regardless. Time for Admiral Akbar, it's a trap! As it's all building up to, obviously, the show ending with the exact same bit the last show did, with a Sokoa beating down a Cody Rhodes friend. Just building up the odds against Cody Rhodes. They feel like they're putting in the effort to make you believe Solo could win, and I guess that's because he's going to get stopped by Roman. So you have to believe that Roman was necessary? Because at the moment, it just feels like you're just waiting for Roman Reigns to come out for the entire feud. The fans, within week two, were chanting, "We want Roman." It's like, well, yeah, that is the end point. Didn't even allow it to breathe for a second. It's like, no, Roman now, please. It's like, no, we're very clearly building up to SummerSlam, and you're chanting Roman week two. Well, at least wait a month or something. Throughout the show, I talked about it, like being teased and things. One of the teasers was Solo Sikoa giving a promo to Kemba. I loved the framing of this with Solo in the middle and the three lads in the background. Jacob Fatu with praying behind him with the beads. A triangle of light as well beaming. He looked really, really well framed together. And the lighting as well for this tape promo, just so perfect for what they're trying to achieve with this character. Like, shit like this really does help perception. Like, it's not going to fix it, but it helps. Cody's partner, obviously Kevin Owens, and obviously this is all building up to Kevin Owens getting beaten up. It was the exact beats you would expect for it as well. Now, as soon as A-10 Down came out, I was like, oh, okay, so this is like a lower important week. This is the kind of week where you can skip this. The only thing of importance really is the fact that Kevin Owens came out and beat up. It's that part of the bigger story of the Bloodline taking out Cody's friends, so Cody's alone. And then that's what necessitates Roman coming back. But as long as you know that story's happening, you don't need to have watched SmackDown this week. You could have skipped all of it. And the main event match itself was like, it's all swell and all. Like, just like the past months of segments just waiting for the Bloodline interference. Cody naming the Crossroads on Theory for the win in the end. So, did interfere in the match. When Solo's music hits before their victory can even be finished but getting announced. KO with a finger to Lowe's eye, evening the odds. Hilarious that his selling of that had folks on social media just being like, look how great he is. Just keep him going. It was hilarious. It was brilliant that he just kept selling the eye for the whole thing. It's like, what are we even doing here, folks? What is this level of critique? What are we doing here? I often think that when I go onto Twitter nowadays, and there's a reason that I'm just not on Twitter that much. And as I said last week, when I go on Twitter, I'll retweet and like stuff from my friends. But yeah, just, there's like, what is this level of critique? What are we working with here? It's not just the best thing, it's the way that social media has also done that to film as well. There's a lot of the critique and the kind of threads that take off at the moment, especially in the Musk era with the engagement stuff because of the monetizing side of it. It's like, it's a lot of nothing. A lot of the critique level we're getting here is very surface level. That's not my thing. No, with me. Oh, I'm not even joking when I said yesterday, I've forgotten the guy's name, Billiam? The guy did a really long Lost video. But yeah, that came up in my feed, like a 6-hour video specifically talking about season 5 of Lost. And I'm like, you know what? That's a deep dive into something that's genuinely analysing it and breaking it down. That's my shit. I didn't watch all 6 hours. I probably got 45 minutes in. But the point remains that I still watched 45 minutes of that. Of a man breaking down a series of Lost that I didn't even get to. I didn't even know. I don't even think I finished series 4. I'm not even sure I finished series 3. I didn't even get to that series. I'd fallen off by then. And I still was watching that because it's breaking down a piece of media. In that detail, because again, social media is kind of built for surface levels of stuff, be that surface level reactions to things, surface level understanding of things, surface level analysis. It's kind of just what it is in a way. That's not what I not really what I fall to. Basically what I'm saying is, get off social media, instead listen to Trish and Sarah. That's basically what I'm getting at. Listen to them instead. Jacob Fatu, the difference maker yet again, multiple charging hip bumps to the corner set Owens, Solo and Tama giving Cody the powerbomb through the announce table treatment, KO whipped into the ring post with a chair around his neck, ending the show on the same beat we ended it last week with. In terms of plot moving forwards, it's like we've taken the second step, but we're at the same line. So now we've got both feet on the line. I don't know, if you want to jump forward or something, we can do it now to keep the analogy going. The Olympics around the corner. I don't know why I've specifically got long jumps stuck in my head. Yeah, I'm ready. When I say I'm ready for it to make that next step, and there's a lot that happens a lot with Triple H stories, it's because they're foreshadowed, because they're actually set up and you can see where they're going, or you can see what they're setting up for, where they're teasing or telling you a character note might be going. Or the multiple different ways they could be going, like with the Damian Priest Gunter stuff, where they've got two different directions they could go with different winners from that, but they are painting the world. But with a lot of stuff, you kind of see where they're going. Like the teasing within the Judgment Day has been happening for so long. But then also they've got the problem of storylines that kind of just stay playing the same note for a little bit too long sometimes. Be that Chad Gable and the Alpha Academy, as in like Otis and Tozawa, which is their little breakup thing. Be that Rhea Ripley with the Liv Morgan stuff. Be that here with the Bloodline. We're getting a lot of the same note being played every week. I'm like, okay, I get it. Right, I'm ready for the next note. But you kind of just got to wait for that next note because Triple H doesn't like to do big things at the B shows. And that's why for me, it's an absolutely genius idea, a vision for WWE Nick Khan had with genuinely making it a world company and taking it global with the pay-per-views. That has been an absolute killer, an absolute win, especially when they do it with their B shows. It doesn't mean that when you come out afterwards, like, I mean, it wasn't that memorable, but the crowd's white hot and they elevate it and that's what makes it special. Unfortunately, then when you do a B show, a normal place, that's why at Canada, you're called a normal place. Yeah, Money in the Bank didn't really leave that big of a mark, really. You got the excitement of the ladder matches, but it turns out when you come out of it, it did feel like, oh, actual character progression and storyline progression wise, we haven't really gone anywhere. This has almost been like a little window of bubbled excitement for the Money in the Bank, but yeah, we've not actually progressed anywhere, really moved forward at all. We're at the same note we were after the last pay-per-view. We're at the same point. Not a lot of us progressed. Then you get to SummerSlam and finally things can kick forward. Finally, Damian Priest on Monday Night Raw has got a programme that has me actually invested in his character for the first time, other than I'm the champion, therefore he should be invested. Like, no, I'm actually getting him. They're actually giving me reasons to care. Maybe please, finally back. I did not like the segment this week, which I find interesting to see that that's not the majority take. The majority take is, no, it was fun. That wasn't my take. That wasn't how I enjoyed it. But yeah, and then it's the same problem with the Bloodline on SmackDown, where we're getting the exact same note every week, and we're not really moving forward, as the analogy I was using. We're ready to make the jump, but all we did this week was move our second foot there, so now we still haven't made the jump. Is it that we're more ready than ever to make the jump? But there's not much they can do, really, until SummerSlam. Because, again, I'm talking of, like, Roman Reigns is going to come back. But that just seemed to be, that's the note you play. That seemed to be the note to go for since the day after WrestleMania. And it feels like that's the War Games match as well. New Bloodline versus original Bloodline. But yeah, so anyway, I'm not at the peak investment it seems like the crowd's at, because I'm ready for them to move forward, because we've been playing the same note again. But I expect for the next 2 weeks on SmackDown to get the same notes again. Maybe Cody gets a win. Next week will feel like, well, who's going to be Cody's friend this time? He generally is alone against the Bloodline. How's he going to do this? Because again, you've got to set up the reason for Roman Reigns being there. The situation that necessitates his arrival. Anyway, let's get on with the rest of the show for SmackDown. Andrade versus Carmelo Hayes. For me, this absolutely screamed. But it was the US title for Logan Paul. Because he's not on the show, they've got folks bubbling, but they haven't got a title to fight over. It's that kind of little progression that you would get quite naturally over the period of the year just isn't there because Logan Paul's not there. And for me, that's the main reason why I'd have LA Knight win. But sure, they get the exposure from Logan Paul having the title. He's had it since November, well, whenever the Saudi show was. So he's had it for a while. It feels like we're now at a point where I'm ready for it to change because I'm starting to feel its absence kind of have a negative impact on the show. And the reason I'm talking about it here, because this is the exact kind of match I'm talking about, where it would be nice if they had something to fight for, something tangible there. If the IC title is there, it's actually something where even if they're not directly going for it, it is there in the background. Somebody's on the TV show holding it and they win here for Andrade. It's like, oh, you can easily envision that, oh, he's getting some momentum. He could use that to go somewhere. But because the title's not there, he wins this match. It's like, what's he gaining momentum for, though? Because he's not going to get the world title shot against Cody. So what does his win actually do for him? What's he going to go for next? And for me, that's why it absolutely screams. LA Knight wins. He takes out from Logan Paul. Then he can help establish kind of this level. He's more than over enough to carry it. I'm not someone who like desperately needs the LA Knight character to be champion, but it feels like more for the structure of the show and the way they kind of want to elevate folk. I think in part as well, not only is it this, but when you watch Monday Night Raw and you see what Breaker and Dragunov are doing, it absolutely screams that they're benefiting so much from that. Obviously, that means they get to wrestle Sami Zayn. Like that's in terms of you want to try and get yourself over, there's no other better man to do it. That middle of the card place to just develop and help get over just isn't really there as strongly on SmackDown. Compared to Monday Night Raw, which is absolutely killing it with their bomb breaking and Dragunov arrival and building them up. I don't feel the same for Carmelo, and I feel like the IC title not being there is a big reason why. So yeah, but like, we're at a point now. When you're trying to create those stars, trying to bubble them up and give them momentum, you kind of need the IC title to help with that. It's the point of it. For me, that's the point of the title. Anyway, so with this match, the lads were just given the tilly time to go at it. Like, yeah, the athletic flow was exactly what the Bad Faith has said they didn't like from AEW. But that's why it's a Bad Faith argument you could ignore. Because it doesn't matter which company displays wrestling like this. It's an entertaining style. It's great when they both do it. So stop being weird. Like, oh, I don't like... This is what I hated wrestling. It's like, it's not. It's really not. It almost feels like something that somebody who has had to wait to the weekend to get their opinion, if you know, you know, type of thing. Like, Jesus Christ. I found this match to be an effective way to showcase Melo's fight and in-ring ability. He's a cocky character, so give him the space to show us why. But with Andrade winning, his cockiness is checked, and now whenever he brags, there'll be that air of, you're not as good as you think you are, because we saw him be all confident that go against Andrade, put in a fighting effort, but he didn't win. They're kind of a longer-term writing, making room for a character to grow into for me for Carmelo, that I still have a reaction to seeing it happen whenever I notice its existence in WWE. I've still got the whiplash from the Vince era, where this kind of thing would send you into another Carmelo Hayes Andrade match next week. But like, I would bank money on it. We would see this match over and over and over in the middle of the shows, compared to this loss meaning something for Carmelo, where he's actually getting a kind of career check of where he is in his rookie year, coming against really strong opposition. And because that's somewhat happened to Bron Breakker. Part of the story was that Triple H didn't want a title change to happen on the B-show, to which immediately it's like, well, don't book it for the B-show then. That you can do whatever you want. The entire world is at your whim. You can invite it for whenever. But for me, I really like the loss because of what it meant for Bron Breakker's character. For him, it was a reality check where he maybe was coasting a little bit. And when he came out Monday Night Raw the next night, it was like, okay, I understand what I actually have to do to kick it up. So actually win a title in WWE, he's got to take it a bit more seriously rather than just being the rampaging bad guy. He's got to actually take the competition part seriously with Sami Zayn. So I really like that. And that gives him the space to step up on SummerSlam. So even though they booked it and they go, let's not change it here, let's change it at the biggest stage or at the biggest stadium. But that has given us a bit of character growth for Bron Breakker. So it's worked in that sense for me. And I've said that for Carmelo, for possibly it could be him. The space has been created for him to have a character arc. That doesn't mean that's what's happening at all. It could have just been a go out there, prove yourself. Okay, cool. There may not be anything happening. But the space has been created for you to do something with. It's there. Bayley and Nia Jax continuing their feud. The cocky Queen of the Ring villain and the confident babyface champion had a split-screen chin wag. It was your standard fare. Like, you know what each character said without even watching it. But seeing our goody champions being all confident and competent, like, after the years of the Vince superheroes and easily fooled heroes, like, it's just nice. They're just competent people. And they're confident because they're the champions. Like, Sami Zayn and Bayley, I put them in that boat, that same place. Like, a champion who feels confident in their ability because they're the champion, but they're not being a dick about it. It's not like a heelish confidence cockiness. It's a no, I've got room to be arrogant here. I'm a champion. And I love the way that Sami Zayn used it to progress his character. It's the same for Cody Rhodes and the same for Bayley here. It feels like they feel like a strong champion, which is, in terms of like character arcs and character progression, these characters are genuinely progressing into something. Which takes us into Tiffany Stratton, talking of growing into a role. Tiffany Stratton versus Mia Yim. Nia Jax out at ringside supporting our Miss Money in the Bank. Crazy Michin taking an Alabama slam on the outside. Like, I've been told that move sucks to take in the ring. Never mind on the outside. So Jesus Christ, me, Yim. These two were great together. Yim on a now months-long stretch of impressive outings and Stratton always coming across as such a composed performer. Jax's distraction sets up the prettiest moonsault, but champion Bayley out through the crowd, dodging Nia's briefcase attempt and beating the inanimate object up. Distraction for the Mia Yim roll-up. WWE really likes writing their Money in the Bank holders to lose and have momentum slip away. That said, it is a win that helps Mia Yim a lot. As a performer, she's putting in some great performances, but as a character, there's not really a lot there. She's been helping Bayley out, but she's really been the pinfall person. But this almost feels like, no, you genuinely are putting in some great performances and that getting over. Give her a few wins and she's going to generally start to get over. So, or at least become an established character. So this felt like it was huge for Mia Yim, whilst maybe another young rookie character getting a reality check and is like, okay, I need to step up or whatever. Unless it's a 50-50 booking it. Because that's not what I feel like is happening with Sami Zayn and Bron Breakker. That doesn't feel like a 50-50 booking feud. Because it feels more like this was a moment for that character to realise they have to do something and change. Other notes. Bianca Belair was given 2 minutes to course correct by defeating Chelsea Green. Chelsea had her bumping boots on for this one. The Scottish tag champs up on the screen letting us know they'll be on Smackers next week. So we're going to get the superheroes versus the Scorsish next week. LA Knight and Logan Paul had a sans table contract signing. Two lads just stood in their jeans and leather, yapping about who's got the bigger bollocks. I'm sure a crowd loved this.
But it's like, oh, this is what men's wrestling is. Oh, I've got a big ball. Oh, I have.
that's my LA Knight impression. Nailed it. But yeah, that was Friday Night SmackDown. Absolutely skippable. Absolutely skippable. If you watched the show last week and you know what beats they're doing heading into SummerSlam, if you watch the show this week, you still know all of those beats exist. I think my metaphor for the long jumping person who has now got both feet on the line doing a standing jump, we're at that position for pretty much everybody on the show. Which may be why I'm a bigger fan of Mia Yim, because at least nobody, if no one else is going to be moving anywhere near past the line or whatever, you might as well use the opportunity to build someone else up a little bit. It's like, yeah, sure, why not give Mia Yim a little win? Why not? Everybody else is stood at the line waiting. So why not? But yeah, maybe that's not a bad final line for SmackDown. Every story, every character is just stood at the line waiting for SummerSlam. They haven't really got any arcs building up to it or introducing anything new at this point. We're now just waiting. And to be fair, it's not that far away. It's really not that far away. Anyway, speaking of everything's going to be fine, let's jump on over to Monday Night Raw and Green Bay. I know there's nothing in the transition that relates, but I said it like it does. So that's what you're getting. So anyways, jump on over to Green Bay.
Green Bay. Is the Bay green? The Bay's green. My shoes are pink.
Drew was shown to have settled his suspension backstage with Adam Pearce in a quick no-dialogue transitioning shot earlier in the show. Now, what does old Punkerton have to say? Is the Bay green? The Bay is green. And my shoes are pink. Good stuff, Punk. Your hardest hitting monologue yet. Voice is cutting stuff. He's cleared and he wants his Scottish pound of flesh. McIntyre out. Pierce shortly following out with others to let us know there'll be no contact between the two till SummerSlam. For this match, I've got a big problem. I've got a big referee problem. Burn It Down plays out the Titantron, and the commentators are acting all confused, like they don't really know what's going on. The crowd didn't really react to what Adam Pearce had said. It's like, in terms of like the kind of audience he cultivated and the way that information is gotten across to said audience, I'm not surprised. An AEW audience, because they're conditioned differently in the way they receive information from the show, they probably would have picked up on that and gone, oh, he's the special guest referee, don't need anything extra. But at WWE, everyone's acting out of confusion like nothing's been revealed. So after Adam Pearce said he's got a referee problem and then Burn It Down hit, so like, that's all the information you need. But nobody reacted until Seth Rollins did his whole built-up reveal in the ring, and the commentators go, oh, it means that. Oh my God, who would have seen this coming? Now, like me when Adam Pearce told me, like at the start of the segment. Seti Boo announced as the special guest referee for the summer show in a vinyl trench coat that looks like the back was burnt off in an explosion. Either that or it's a trench coat for a dinosaur. I like the second reality more. I'm not going to lie. He's such a smart dinosaur. What is this Rhea Ripley and Liv Morgan storyline? So, as I said earlier, when I went onto the social medias, I saw this week's segment getting a positive reception. People were pretty high on this. Me personally, I think it's at the exact same bar everything else in the storyline has been. It's technically not any worse because it's the same level. I accidentally, when I was writing my notes for it last week, a week before, when I wrote down the note that when I was watching AEW's All About Eve stuff with their storyline, and then I watched this, AEW feels like adult storytelling for adults because it's storytelling that is more adult, it's being more adult. Whilst this feels like storytelling for children. This is for teenagers. This is for kids. Feels like the level that we're catering to here with this storyline. And it feels like that's the level that, when I say sex and stuff is being treated, it feels like it's being treated in a teenage/child way. Look at AEW with their All About Eve stuff, and that feels like it's being treated in a very adult and mature way. And for me, that's the absolute massive difference in the two companies with their women's storylines that are both technically about relationships and tricking people and luring them in forever. Those are the similar notes being hit. But obviously the way it's being done is so different. The old cinema line that I keep repeating of, it's not what you do, it's the way that you do it. That's what gets results. Is that Bananarama? Anyway, for what happened here, Dom continuing to repel Liv's sexual advances in the workplace. I'm sure no internal cultural attitudes are being displayed here. Throughout the show, Rhea trying to stop her stablemates from starting unnecessary fights, but the dumb lads read that as, she's just got a soft spot for Jay, so we should probably still be men and beat him up though, right? When in reality, she just knows how much stronger they could be running the show as a stable if they stopped picking needless fights and spread themselves thin. And I do like that when she's talking about Jay, we saw it with Braun Strowman. They were picking a fight they didn't need to be in, they were never going to win. They kept picking it every week and faced the consequences, and it nearly cost Damien Priest in different occasions. Her point was proven when they jumped Jay on site. So not only had we seen it in the past, so we know what she's talking about, we got it directly happening on this show just to reinforce it one more time. Sami Zayn happened to be being interviewed around the corner to make the save and set up that tag offering for the main event, so now they've also got themselves into a needless fight with the Intercontinental Champion. Irish Judgment losing against them in the main event to boot, a fun main event it was. I mean, Sami Zayn in a tag match, I'm going to take it. And Finn Balor's still good in tag matches. Dragging Dom out to the ring, calling out Liv, who appears in the crowd, again continuing the advances, this time elevating to I Have Feelings for Dom. Dom finally stood up for himself, firmly telling Liv no after months of unwanted sexual advances and telling his abuser to leave him alone, which makes Liv cry, overacting levels of crying, the camera following her and focusing on her as she walks away too. When Rhea then whispers in his ear and kisses his cheek, the segment feeling to me so off and weird because it plays out like it's generated sympathy for Liv. For me, it's absolutely screaming that they go for the ending feeling of Christian versus Chris Jericho from WrestleMania 20 with the whole Trish Stratus love triangle thing. But in the end, you've got the big heel turn with Christian and Trish Stratus there. Keep Dom with that mega heel heat and really make Rhea the babyface. But also it feels like Judgment Day itself has been kind of focused into the babyface and the heel kind of sides of it. Because there's also the thing that there could be the fact of Finn Balor being the one that costs and he's the one that kind of causes the split and Dom stays with Rhea. But that feels a bit more backgroundy. And when I said that this storyline specifically in WWE has felt like it's a level of treating sex and that stuff like a teenager would, like it's telling a story in a childish way, the sort of stuff like that doesn't feel like it belongs here. So I'm treating everything else in this storyline with the same level. No. The biggest twist we're getting is Dominic Mysterio teaming with Liv to try and give this generation that same moment with them snogging on the stage. That's what I assume they're building to. And this segment as well, because with the whole Liv thing, it feels like the way they actually filmed it and produced it felt like it generated sympathy for Liv, with Rhea coming off as like the remorseless heel with the whisper and kiss to the cheek immediately after. Even though I'm sure they were going for girls be crazy, am I right? And technically, both actions are within characters, but it's the way it was done that it was completely backwards. Like, you don't want to generate sympathy for Liv. Don't follow her after with a whole new camera angle there to specifically capture her reaction. And don't immediately pair that with the image of Rhea whispering into Dom's ear. Like, it sounds basic to say, sequences of images tell stories, but there's no need to overthink your analysis for this one. That's what they've done. That is what they've done. In terms of the story you're telling, you show, oh, and then we made a really nerdy film reference. Nerdy reference to silent film. Probably don't need to reference Sunrise when I'm talking about this. But in terms of the pairing of the image, you have her crying, and then immediately the next shot is Rhea whispering into Dom's ear. This isn't Dom's words, these are Rhea's words. It's kind of what that sequence of images tells you. That's not me saying that's what they're doing. That's me saying that's what the images told you. That's why it generated sympathy for Liv. That's why Rhea felt a little bit more heelish in that moment. The sequences of the images in which they were shown to us, that's the story you ended up telling. Either show them in the different sequence, or for me, the main one is don't have that shot of Liv. You can have the shot of her walking out, but not from the whole new camera angle capturing her face. Purely because you're then cutting to the whispers. In terms of, like, again, the sequence telling the story, it's why it felt a little bit off to me. But when I said people were liking it, obviously that level of analysis wasn't happening. Let's move on to the kind of stuff that I do like in WWE. Gunther opened the show, the crowd booing him for what he said last week, and he was just like, nah, I meant that shit. Just really digging in. Informing himself of the Austrian saying, which translates to, your friends tell me who you are. So Gunther calls all of Judgment Day bums and street trash. Just to really dig into it. Asking for Priest to just come out and hand him his title because we all know he's just a wannabe champion. Instead, Priest stiffing him with a forearm. The first time seeing proper babyface fire from the man since becoming champion. Last week did a great job setting this up too. That's why I don't really blame the performer in Damian Priest. This kind of character stuff is all down to the writing and the production side. After the break, the two brawling by the open garage door and taking it outside. Huge, huge positives, as this is what last week set up, and they fully followed through with it immediately at the start of the show. So you're not hanging about waiting for the segment that you kind of know is going to happen, just immediately get it out of the way. That's great stuff for me. Technically, the Gunther stance hasn't progressed at all, but I like him firmly standing his ground even more. No, I'm going to stick by this. I'm going to be a dickhead. I do like that. I didn't like the commentary hammering, because quite often if you don't really know what they're trying to tell with the story, just listen to the commentary. Because that is the story they're trying to tell. That was the best way to follow what on earth was happening during the Vince era, because he would be feeding the story through the commentators. So even if what you were seeing made no sense, the commentators were telling the story. All you had to do was listen. It was never actually that difficult to follow a Vince story, and you could see why it didn't make sense because you listened to the commentary. Here, they're calling Gunther a entitled brat, and I'm just kind of like, oh, that's not really what I would do for the character. I feel like making him entitled, but it's the fact that he backs it up as well. So those two can work, but the brat part just doesn't. It's the entitled brat being the entire title. That's what doesn't quite work. Because what part of Gunther is a brat? Apart from it being a PG American insult word for somebody that you can use for television. Apart from it being that, there is no brattiness to his character whatsoever, so it doesn't fit at all. Like, sure, he can be entitled, and they can use him talking about his privileged life and the way he came into the business, and I really like the dynamic of Damian Priest fighting and clawing to make WWE recognise and see him, whilst WWE were the ones who were trying to desperately get Gunther to sign for them. I like that completely different dynamic. However, no part of his character has been bratty, so it doesn't make any sense. It doesn't work for me. But it felt like that was the line they were told to say, which is why I'm kind of hammering home on it. But for me, it's not really a character beat that quite works for him. That said, everything else is relatively fine. especially because of what it's doing to Damian Priest. It's making me care about him for the first time in his title reign. Like, sure, not every note is perfect for the Gunter character, but what it's doing to Damian Priest, I'm perfectly fine with it. I'm perfectly fine with it. To a point where I can believe a world where Damian Priest wins. That means job done here. Job done. Because the entire summer I've been like, no, give it Gunter, because I'm not that interested in the Priest character. Finally, they're doing something to make you care. That said, for me, that makes it perfect when you pair it with the Rhea Ripley stuff, which is why I sequenced it here in the notes afterwards. Because for me, when you pair it with that, it means it's absolutely perfect time to split the Judgment Day. A split has kind of been foreshadowed. They've been teasing it for a long time, but it died a little bit when Rhea Ripley went away. So then the different dynamics of, well, Damian Priest's trying to take control, so it's a different kind of animosity within the group compared to just like your normal split stuff is in. A cog is missing, a part of them is missing, so they are struggling. And that kind of carried them through the summer a bit. Now Rhea Ripley's back, I feel like you can really run with something, and this storyline should be the thing that drives a wedge properly between the Judgment Day. But we've seen it before where they've tried something like this with two kind of a wedge to a stable, then it actually makes them stronger. I think I talked about this with Judgment Day last year, where we're building up to War Games or whatever it was, and it felt like, I was thinking of saying for their War Games match, like, if you give Judgment Day the win when we're expecting them to lose and maybe have a split problem, then you've suddenly made them stronger than they ever were before and they can win titles and such. That's not what they went for. They went for, let's get rid of all momentum to a point where their mid-card kind of, apart from Rhea, and then he wins the title anyway. I was like, I would have gone with the other idea, to actually give momentum to the guy you're going to make world champion. Anyway, speaking of people who are fighting for champions, I'm kidding it with these transitions today. The number one contender match for the Intercontinental Championship, Ilya Dragunov versus Bron Breakker. Calling these two up to just be career rivals and constantly elevating each other was such a smart idea. Dropping Dragunov onto the top of the ring post ribs was such an awesome ad break send-off. The first part of this match doing such a great job to advertise the rest of the tone of the action for when we came back. Ilya giving plenty of space to showcase his fight, big suplexes, H-bomb form dives and drivers onto aprons. But ultimately, this was a display for Breakker. Going for a forearm off the apron was unwise from Dragunov because spear! The ref cornering off the match, ruling a TKO with commentary painting the story that Dragunov's head hit the apron with the spear. Ilya was the canvas for that Bron display. What happens when it's time to paint with Sami Zayn? I don't think this. I've seen the conversation of, did this make Ilya Dragunov looking weak here? When you have such a contested fight, it's okay to take the loss. But it wasn't that he took a spear on the outside and went down. It was more that he, in taking the spear, his head hit the apron, was immediately what the commentators were saying. And that's what caused the TKO. It wasn't that he hit such a good spear that he couldn't get up and Dragunov is therefore just a bit weak. No. Like, he hit his head on the apron. It was with that. It was more of a coincidental type of thing. But what that does for the Bron character, but it still makes him look devastating enough, paints the idea of what on a different day where that somewhat kind of little accident type of thing doesn't happen to the Dragunov character, Dragunov still has that fight there. So I didn't mind it because it's not just Breakker who's somewhat elevated. Obviously, he's massively elevated, he's going for Sami Zayn, but they did a good enough job to keep the competition there for Dragunov, even in the loss. So yeah, I'm a fan of it, I'm alright. And the Wyatt Six, like, first off, lol at Michael Cole describing Nikki Cross as that witch-like being. It's like, man, the Wyatts cannot escape those isms of, it's a hammer-like object, which was an absolute banger of a line that was delivered when Bray Wyatt whipped out a big wacky hammer. It's like, what? You mean that big hammer? That's not a hammer-like object, my man. That's a hammer. Oh, come on, Dave. Under Vince was sometimes incredible. Last week, Rowan was giving the time for his grief. Now, Nikki Cross gets hers. Kind of close-ups with wet hair and a sound peeking scream. Like, hey, I'm game for anything that'll scare the kids. He's scaring the kids, don't bro. Chad Gable out with his new Creed pupils, chatting shit after Otis and Tozawa teamed with Xavier Woods to lose against the Final Testament. Each former member continuing to turn Gable down, leading to the Creed brothers delivering a lamping instead. Otis fighting back and getting his hands on his former mentor, chairs in hand, ready for a swing in. That's when the lights come down. Crowd chanting, you fucked up, as the piano played. So kudos to the censors for just letting that chant fly. Like, holy shit, got cut, but you fucked up. Absolutely fine. Absolutely fine. Out onto the stage stride the creepy group, but Dallas is in the ring, in full howdy getup, dreads down, echoing very strongly. That echo must have been purposeful as he then hit really well done Sister Abigail to a massive pop. The crowd really receptive to that. I thought they did a really good job with the Wyatt Six this week. I think they've done a really good job since the debut. Because I wasn't the biggest fan of the debut because it was like, on one thing hand, trying to tell us it's being more grounded. On the other hand, you got spooky smoke emitting after a backstage area where they've committed murders. Or at least at the bare minimum, assault. At bare minimum, you're going to trial or you're going to court here. At bare minimum. That said, since then, I've been a big fan of what they've done. Especially as they're hitting on the emotional character reasons for each member being there. We haven't had Joe Gacy yet, but this week Nikki Cross, I wouldn't have minded maybe just a little bit of words from Nikki. But this one being different to the others, maybe just to focus on the madness of her whenever she comes out. That was the main point of the kind of madness side of it. So you don't really get an explanation just so she stays mad like that. So I was a massive fan of what they did with Oak Rowan last week, and the one with Bo Dallas the week before was equally as good. And this week, even though the Nikki Cross thing was like a quick flash, you got a bigger substance in the ring with what they did with their Uncle Howdy hitting such a strong Sister Abigail. Spooky stuff isn't like, it's not really like definitely my cup of tea, but since then I generally have been behind what they've been doing here. We'll see where it goes afterwards, but for me that's 3 good weeks. 3 good weeks. They also didn't do the Amazon delivery thing with Nikki Cross coming out and just handing a tape over. It's like, no, we've got the tape, let's just play it. Like, you know what, at this point, we as an audience know where the tapes come from. You don't need to see it get delivered every single week. Other notes, there's not really a lot to get into. Poor Lara Valkyrie is now teaming with the Party Girls. She was aided by the Party Girls for a one-on-one match with Sonny Deville. Ringside breakdown. Valkyria making the mistake of dropkicking Stark and Baszler, giving Deville the opening to hit her finisher, whatever it's called. Deville's Advocate, I think it is. Bronson Reed and Pete Dunne were set to fight, but you got Daniel Bryan with an immediate Sheamus bro kick out from stage right, as their little feud continues to bubble. And more for Pete Dunne getting a bit more featured and getting an actual little story here. Anyway, that was Monday Night Raw. Both shows really staying at the same mark, not really like massively progressing stuff. But the Monday Night Raw, there were just a few more things confirmed. Just the fact that CM Punk and Drew McIntyre, their stuff getting like, no, confirmed, we're at it now. You can get excited, it's happening. There wasn't really that on SmackDown, but for Monday Night Raw, you got a little bit more of that. You got the Bo Dallas stuff with Chad Gable's continuing to progress. I'm assuming we're going to get a match at SummerSlam there as well. And it's the same thing with Bron Breakers. Like, okay, we're getting the match announced for SummerSlam. SmackDown was as is. Raw was as predicted. That's the difference. Raw had stuff to actually announce and to actually... No, this is why you can get excited for what's coming up. It's not the most exciting week for WWE, which is great when there's the G1 climax, when there is so much great wrestling. And seriously, if you've not seen Shota Umino versus Gabe Kidd, watch it now. It's generally such a fascinating watch. Still thinking about it the day after. But yeah, we got that on, and I've got this AEW as well, with them ramping up with All In London and with Blood and Guts. Like, there's a lot of other wrestling stuff. So you know what, when WWE is in that zone of, you know what, you don't have to tune in until SummerSlam. It's just, this is as is. I'm appreciative of that. Like, yeah, that's good. That's grand. That's grand. That just means I mean, I've got to watch it, but, you know, for you, for you normal people who don't, you know, write copious amounts of notes whilst watching it, because you've got a podcast to do. Like, for you normies, this is for you. This is the moment. It's like, oh, thank God. I don't have to pay full attention during the G1 Climax huge tournament or with AEW amping up properly. I can kind of zone out of WWE for a little bit because you're not going to miss anything as it's amping up. Anyway, with that, I say... thank you for listening, engaging in any form, any manner. Always appreciate it. Never take it for granted. I'll be back this time to next week to talk about SmackDown and Monday Night Raw. So with that, I bid you adieu. Adios.